is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I'm so happy because Dr. Dudley Danoff, a world-renowned urologist and a frequent guest on this program, but actually he hasn't been on since last August, so I'm so happy you're back, Dr. D, Dr. Danoff. Hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, your book is wonderful. We've talked about it on this program before. I think this is your 10th or 11th time on the program, and the book is, it got renamed. First, it was Penis Power, and you talk about you had to change the name because somehow penis becomes, what do you say? It's
pejorative. I spent half my life telling people the penis is to the urologist what the elbow is to the orthopedist. It's a body part. Get over it.
Get over it. So you changed the name. The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. How to Stay Vital at Any Age. And, in fact, we're going to talk about your Chapter 9 in the book, As Old As You Feel, The Life Story of the Penis. And I especially like, you know, because I think you know I'm also a gerontologist. I did some studies on aging and sexuality back in the early 90s with an MD, Dr. Walter Bortz, and they were published in medical journals. So I'm very interested in successful aging and especially in aging and sexuality. And you have a great quote in your book on 131. You do not stop having sex because you get old. You get old because you stop having sex. Hear, hear, Dr. D.
Well,
that is so true.
Absolutely, absolutely, 100% true. And, you know, talk about aging. You know, all body parts age. We get a few wrinkles around our eyes, some gray hair. I mean, I'm talking about appearance. But the most peculiar thing about the penis is that the penis of a teenage boy or a 21-year-old boy in his sexual prime and the appearance of a penis of a 90-year-old man is essentially the same, maybe with such minor differences that only a trained urologist could tell those differences.
Right.
So from appearance, it's an ageless organ.
But an ageless organ, yes.
But in function, obviously, you know, it changes, and we have to do things which are age-appropriate and not have unrealistic expectations. Of course, we have many, many, many things that are used medically and are perfectly legitimate to improve performance, and, you know, we can talk about that, but
yeah, we will talk about that, because, you know, sometimes people use the word viropause or male menopause, and of course it's not male menopause is not correct because there aren't hormones involved. But sometimes we wonder the cause for ED as a man ages, hormones, psychological changes, vascular problems, heart disease, prolonged monogamy, or simply all the insults the body accrues with aging.
I mean, that list is a very complete list. Sometimes in urology or in medical terms, we don't say menopause. We call it andropause.
Andropause, yes.
Now, that almost always refers to serum testosterone levels.
Mm-hmm.
But in menopause or the aging male, sometimes called the grumpy old male,
mm-hmm.
Men syndrome. It's testosterone, which is the main leg of that diagnosis. But so it affects the mood. It affects muscle mass. It affects the ability, the sex drive. It results in a paunchy middle. So a lot of people saying you've got the grumpy old man syndrome. And a lot of commercials and big pharma you know, they appeal to that. Are you grumpy? Are you, and they're trying to sell testosterone replacement therapy, TRT, to people that don't need it. They're just old and grumpy.
Yes. Now, before, because I do want to talk about TRT, because I think it's important, but I wanted to give a little more of a foundation, and this reflects my practice, and I bet you hear the same thing. I heard from one of my clients, I call them clients, patients, it doesn't matter, and she said, I have some menopausal symptoms, but the main problem is that my husband has more. And then she went on to say, I got tired of things not happening when I tried to get sex started. I always thought it was me. I stopped trying because I thought it was embarrassing to him. I hear this. I hear this in my practice. You must hear it. Well, you're seeing the guy. Sometimes the wives or the partners come in. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That patient, client of yours, is obviously a very sensitive woman.
Yeah.
And, we men, the machismo, never wanting to go to the doctors, we're indestructible. Mm-hmm. We want to catch the winning pass in the fourth quarter of the upcoming Super Bowl this week.
Yeah.
So when you're, and it's all out there, I mean, you can fake an orgasm, but you can't fake an erection.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just absolutely indisputable.
Yeah, you can fake an orgasm, but not an erection. And so many men wish they could will an erection, right?
Well, you can overwill it, that's for sure. The problem is self-doubt, is an erection killer. I mean, if you let one little morsel of self-doubt get between your ears, I guarantee you nothing is going to happen between a man's legs. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and it becomes, for many men, I think, a larger challenge to his virility and vitality, because
Absolutely.
A man, well, you write about this, and you know about this after 40-plus years in practice, a man is identified with his penis quite a lot.
I was going to add, not only 40 years in practice, but 40 years being married to the same woman,
Yes, and I've had the
expertise.
Privilege of meeting your beautiful wife. that is really commendable. It really is, and she is lovely. And she has her own life, too, and I think that's pretty important. Because she sings in Israel, doesn't she? And here
she has,
as well.
She has a successful career. But I remember many, many times, particularly in regard to her public persona. So she would be asked the question, what do you think about, your husband's book? So, there is a slight chauvinistic tinge to it. Not much, but it's there. And she said, well, he has his ideas, and I have mine. So
mm-hmm.
I agree with everything he says in the book. It's funny.
Well, it's I think it's great that you've worked this out, that you can still be vital, I think, even passionate partners after all these years.
I talk a lot about that in the book, and there's a classic. You got to keep it fresh. You got to keep it new. That's the nature of the beast. And there's a very, very famous classic experiment in human physiology, and it's a mouse experiment. You take a male and a female mouse. You put them in the cage. The female is in heat. The male will mount the female, and then there's an interval which we call the refractory period. And, of course, that gets longer and longer until the poor male mouse, drops over near death and exhaustion. You take the lady mouse out, you paint her with a new mouse color, you spritz her with some new and fresh mouse piff, and you put the lady back in the cage, and the guy's up there mounting her almost as frequently as square one. So, you know, variety, difference, psychogenics, but the male mentality is very much like that. So if you want to have a long and successful relationship, whether you're male, female, bisexual, heterosexual, homosexual, you know, you got to keep it young. You got to keep it fresh. You got to, you know, keep spritzing perfume here and there.
That's right. Well, because dopamine, the hormone of arousal, needs to be expressed, and it helps a lot when you have some novelty. So you can create novelty within a monogamous relationship, and that's what you do. Keep it new and keep it fresh.
Or try at least, yes.
The partner part of this is really, really important because if a man does not have a regular, trusted girlfriend, wife, partner, he is at greater risk as he ages. Haven't you seen that be true?
You know, absolutely. We're talking about this self-doubt, you know, as a... Mm-hmm. Man ages, his erections are not as firm, he mm-hmm. needs more stimulation, he needs patience, the fear of failure becomes a real dominant factor. And if you don't have a reliable, you know, understanding partner who could, you know, laugh at your frailties or your missteps, you have that factor of the fear of failure, and there's nothing that kills an erection more than the fear of failure. So even if a man is physiologically and chemically capable of getting an erection, you know, what goes on between his ears is reflected on what goes on between his legs.
Yes, exactly.
Concept of a supporting, understanding, you know, partner who is not critical, not judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as both an aging husband and a longtime urologic surgeon, that's a big factor.
Huge. And even in my experience with clients, men who are in their like late 40s and beyond, they yes. become more aware of emotional numbness. And because at times if they don't have a partner that is satisfying, because what they're needing to find is emotional connection, safety, communication. And the thing is, and you know this especially, most men don't know about that because they don't get the training for interpersonal communication. They got performance training.
That's it.
Yeah.
Check out the porno for technique.
Yes. And so many men can watch pornography and do solo sex, and they don't have any trouble at all because they don't have to worry about pleasing a partner. They only have to worry about pleasing themselves. No demands from the partner.
True.
Because there's no partner in masturbation.
True. But... So I think I've said this to you before, and if I didn't, I should have. I mean, the greatest aphrodisiac in the world is love itself. It's not, you know,
yes.
goat gonads or some, you know, herbal biscuit or some magic whiffle dust, but it's love.
Well, I certainly have experienced this, and you know this because we're friends. We care about each other in addition to being on the air together. And so I'm so happy to report that, and I sent you the message, the New Year's message, and you said, mazel tov, I'm getting married again. And Brian and I have been together for 7.5 years, engaged for a couple, and we're getting married. But we're very progressive because we have, even though we're seniors, we're healthy seniors, but we are not going to live together. We see each other midweek and weekends, and that's good. So let there be spaces in your togetherness. So that's what's going on with us.
The oldest sort of quote in the book, familiarity breeds contempt.
Now, yes.
Maybe that's a little strong for a new relationship. But the more familiar we are with a person, their habits, the more hope we find. And so that's the way of keeping it young and keeping it fresh. And as we get older, we get set in our ways, and any little deviation from a routine can be, you know, very, very disturbing. So if you keep it light and keep it, I love that idea. I'd love to convince my wife that after all these years, she should live on the west side of Beverly Hills and me on the east. That would be I don't think I would be able to pull that.
No, I don't think so. Not at this point. Well, the partner, the partner is really, really important. I just like to spend a little more time on that before we get into some of the physiological stuff that occurs with erectile dysfunction and so on. Let's see. Lenore Tiefer did some studies, and she found, she interviewed some blue-collar workers, and she found that the wives were quite concerned, and so were the men. And I'm trying to find the quotes, and I will find them in a minute, I think. Because this was, I thought this was a fascinating study. So she found that the man had this idea that at age 50 or whatever, they should still be getting the spontaneous erections of their youth. And the wives were also very upset about this because they suspected often that the husbands were having extramarital sex. And so they would ask themselves, is it me or is it him? The impact of a man's partner cannot be overemphasized, for sure. And one of the policeman's wife told Lenore Tiefer, if I were Marilyn Monroe, even a dead man would get an erection. And, of course, just the opposite is true, because any middle-aged man with potency fears who was confronted with a Marilyn Monroe would probably turn to jelly. But middle-aged wives continued to be the most convenient scapegoats. We're back to knowledge. Knowledge is so important in these instances, right? To know that certain things do happen. You're not, for middle-aged men, who are not necessarily 100% healthy.
No, that's why I say a lot of, particularly male sexuality, has to be age-appropriate, and the man has to be able to laugh at the fact, you know, that it's, you know, not a jackhammer, hard all night, and failure to ejaculate on occasion is not unusual. It's physiologic normal as you age.
Mm-hmm.
This refractory period becomes longer and longer. You know, as a young man, you might have been able to have, you know, 5 ejaculations in one night, and then in middle age, maybe 5 in a week, and as you get older, maybe 5 in a month, because the refractory period is longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, when you're 100, you know, once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and knowledge about the aging process and what is normal at what age level, is, it makes it a lot easier to deal with it.
Yeah.
And you might have to find, you know, a position that, because of a little arthritis, stiffness in your joints,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
mobility, you got to find a different position. And so these things have to be learned. They have to be understood as a normal process of aging. And not think they're abnormal or there's something wrong with you or you're inadequate in any way.
Now, that said, we can't overemphasize the importance of staying healthy because it's about blood flow, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
blood flow to the penis and
yeah, good health and good sex go hand in hand. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
and good. Don't urologists often say that good heart health is good sexual health too?
Oh, absolutely. You've got to have clean arteries. So you have proper blood flow. You have to limit your hypertension. I mean, if you have to make sure it's controlled. And then if you're taking a blood for high blood pressure, that may impact in a negative way on erections because it dilates the vessel and sometimes lowers the blood flow to the penis. You've got to make sure that if you're a diabetic, it's controlled so you don't get any diabetic neuropathy, which is damage to the nerves that supply the penis and make it sensitive enough to get an erection. To make love is a big-time cardiovascular activity. You have to have lower body strength. You have to have upper body strength. And if you're not physically fit, you're not going to enjoy sex nearly as much as you would if you were fit. You've got to watch your diet, low cholesterol, calorie count, weight control. I mean, all of those things are not only good for your heart, but they're good for sex.
Of course. Of course. It makes so much sense. And then you have obese men who worry because their tummies block the view of their genitals, of their penis.
So the story,
and that's not so good.
So the story, you know, goes that I had an uncle so fat he never got his testicles wet when he took a shower. So
that's funny.
And not only that, I mean, I have, you know, more than my share of obese patients, you know, tell me their penis is shrinking. And I point out to them, you know, on the examining table, that the penis arises anatomically from under the pubic bone. And if uh-huh. they've got 3 or 4 inches of what we call pre-pubic fat, fat in front of the pubic bone, then in order for the penis, their penis, to see the light of day, it has to traverse, you know, 4 inches of fat. So there's nothing wrong with the length of their penis, but only the tip of their penis shows because it has to go through all this fat. So I say, you know, lose 30, 40, 50 pounds, and you'll be amazed at how much the size of your, quote, visible penis
right.
Enlarges.
Well, you know, I loved your joke, and I want to just share with you 2 jokes that are in my files, one from George Burns and one from Groucho Marx. And you may have heard these before, but George Burns cracked, "Everything that goes up must come down, but there comes a time when not everything that's down can come up."
It's true.
And then an aging Groucho Marx, leaving a poker game one night, said, "So long, fellas. Guess I'll go upstairs now and see if I can bend one in."
Bend one in.
Bend one in.
I didn't somebody, it might have been Freud, say sometimes it's just a cigar is only a cigar.
Right.
Or maybe Groucho said,
Groucho said that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are great aging, some great aging jokes that we hear. Every urologist hears every genital joke ever invented because
yeah.
it is an embarrassing exam, and every patient, you know, tries to lighten up the mood. You know, hey, doc, did you hear this one? So you have to suffer through your every endless
sure.
joke ever invented.
Well, because the whole subject makes a man feel so vulnerable.
Sure.
And he might feel that he's lost the years of being the master male.
Yep.
And suddenly he feels like a child again, a weakling.
Yep.
And he may then go into some defensive or resignation patterns.
Yes, and we see that all the time. And it also goes into the fact that many men are very reluctant to get the yearly prostate checkup for prostate cancer screening, especially
yeah.
men over 40 who have had a male relative with prostate cancer. Again, you
mm-hmm.
know, getting back to the trying to catch the winning pass in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no self-respected woman would miss her annual pap smear or her mammogram. And yet to get a man, you know, to come in for his yearly prostate exam, it's like pulling teeth. We don't want to admit we're weak. We don't want to even think of the fact that there might be something wrong. So we've got to get men feeling more like women.
Yes, and to face it, because getting a prostate exam and getting, if there is cancer, getting it early is so important, isn't it, Dr. Danoff?
Yeah, because there is really no way to prevent prostate cancer. There are ways we can cure prostate cancer, but we can't prevent it. And if we're going to cure you successfully, meaning that you still are able to have satisfactory intercourse, we need to make that diagnosis at a very early stage in the development of that cancer. So the key to the treatment and the survival for prostate cancer is early detection. And you can't,
yeah.
it's a silent disease.
Uh-huh.
And if you,
silent
if a
disease,
man has
yeah.
a male relative, meaning uncle, brother, father, he's, you know, three times more likely than the average man to get prostate cancer. And if he's an African American, the same holds true, much more common. So after age 40, guys, you got to get in there and do it. Just suck it up.
Suck it up. And, I think this is really important information for us to be getting out there. And so you probably remember the Massachusetts Male Aging Study.
Yeah, it's actually, it's still used.
I know, and because it looked at a cross-sectional random sample of 1,700 men between 40 and 70 years of age from 11 cities. Well, they were mostly around the greater Boston area, thus Massachusetts, right? But they were the subjects. I remember Dr. Walter Bortz and I looked at this study quite a lot when we were doing our research in the early 90s. So subjects were interviewed at home about demographics and lifestyle, their hormone levels, blood pressure, and so on. And then they took a full inventory of their medicines, and finally they completed a questionnaire about their sexual activity. So according to their self-reports, 51% of normal healthy males aged 40 to 70 experience some degree of impotence, defined as a persistent problem attaining and maintaining an erection rigid enough for sexual intercourse. The men were further categorized by the frequency of their problems. Mild problems 25% of the time, moderate 50% of the time, and total 90% of the time. And so that was a pretty significant study, the Massachusetts Male Aging Study.
Yes, I'm aware of the study. And when you think of it in the context of what, when that study was done, those
yeah.
results are shocking.
Shocking. And do you think that's still true, that 51% of normal healthy males aged 40 to 70 experience some degree of impotence?
Well, again, it depends how you define the word some. I mean, is it sometimes? Is it a lot of time? Is it all? My clinical experience is not so harsh on the male as the Massachusetts study. I think there is, you know, more impotence than we would, or ED than we would like to believe in the in that younger age group. I think, you know, now that we have the ED pills, you know, if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, call your, I mean, I would call everybody I know, but, but so, you know, there's more willingness of men to talk about it. ED is much more out of the closet. You know, it's on television endlessly in every sporting event. We have access to more material on the internet of an intimate nature that we might not otherwise have been exposed to. So I think, again, more knowledge is getting out there, and men realize, yeah, maybe I had a bad night on Tuesday with, you know, partner A, but I, there's no reason I can't have a satisfactory experience on Thursday with partner B. So I think it's a little less, but it's still out there. But at the time of that study, you know, we didn't have the pills.
I know. I know.
I mean, that is huge.
Huge.
Particularly in the aging population. And if you're in the middle, in the, sort of the mid-range, you know, 60 to, say, 70, and you're still active, I mean, you use that stuff on a regular basis if you're motivated, and you think you're 45 years old again. There's no question about that.
Yes. One of the studies that Dr. Bortz and I did, we spoke to, over the course of a year, about 20 SERS groups. That's an acronym for Sons in Retirement. And we so all of these guys were at least 50 and to about 95. And we gave them questionnaires, and we put a dollar, this is back in the early 90s, so we put a dollar in each envelope, self-addressed envelopes, hoping then to get them back. And we got a great return, so maybe then the incentive was good. But although one guy returned the questionnaire with a dollar, but the questionnaire was it was not filled out. Anyway, we found out that the partner, it was essential for successful aging for the man. And there was one guy in his late 80s who had a very knowledgeable and loving partner, and he was also healthy. And he said sex is different but better than ever. And but then we had other guys who, now that, again, early 90s, who during the Q&A time said, well, my doctor has me on blood pressure medicine, and my doctor says, well, would you rather have a heart attack or an erection difficulty, or ED? Well, back then they called it impotence.
Right.
And, you know, that was too bad, because the doctor didn't address lifestyle changes.
Right.
As possibilities.
No, look, I think sex is definitely moving to the right. In other words, I see in my practice more and more aging men. I mean, obviously, I see more men than women that are sexually active in one way or another. You know, they're living longer, they're jumping higher, they're running faster. It's amazing, you know, to see men in their 90s playing tennis or swimming on a regular basis.
Yes.
So, if you can get out of bed and brush your teeth in the morning, and you have the desire, there's no reason why you can have, you know, sex till the day you die.
And it may not be, and I talk to my clients about this, especially my older ones, it may not be penetrative sex. It could be, instead of intercourse, it can be outer course, because the touching, the snuggling, the maybe even oral sex is so important to the relationship, right?
Oh, I mean, you just echo my sentiments exactly, and the more I am in this urologic business, the more I see that. You know, as a young stud, you know, you got to put the notches in your belt. But as mm-hmm. an older person, more mature, those are the things that really count.
Yeah. Those are the things that really count. That's right.
Right.
So probably men who have a more diversified ego portfolio, we can put it that way, do better if they have an occasional erection difficulty, either getting it up or keeping it up, right?
Well, I think the more psychologically, not to the point of being a narcissist, but I think the more psychologically centered you are, you have the ability to recognize short-term failure and, you know, not dwell on it and be able to laugh at it or about it. I think psychological soundness is very, very important to have a successful relationship with a person. I think narcissism, if it's only about me, you know, that clearly doesn't work. But I think if you're centered in your psychosexual development, you understand that there's a lot of ways to skin the cat.
Yes, so to speak.
So to speak.
You know, back in, I keep going back, but those of us who are older and have had a lot of experience do that. So I was a speaker in 1995 in Washington, D.C., talking about aging and sexuality, and this was right after Dr. Bortz's and our studies had been published. And so Dr. William Masters was sort of toward the end of his life then, but he was also a presenter, as was Dr. Ruth. It was just thrilling for me to meet these people who I just have been so admiring and were just such. Anyway, I wanted to share with you.
And I would just add that in the case of Dr. Ruth, a giant in her profession.
Yes, absolutely. She would go on Johnny Carson. She was the first one ever to say on national television, penis. And masturbation.
Yes. And
she had a little, she had Austrian something under her feet because she was so short, but she was a kind of a German grandmother type, so she could get away with all of this.
It was remarkable because when my first book came out under the title Penis Power, I got a lot of pushback from the mainstream press about the word penis on the cover of a book. I always refer to Dr. Ruth, you know, a very short person, the least likely person to be a successful sex therapist.
Right.
And there she's on, you know, national television almost as a comedy act. And she's talking about, you know, oral sex, and she doesn't mince her terms. And I say, you know, why could she do it and I can't? She said, well, you're not a little old German grandmother. You
That's right.
You don't have that gravitas. But I learned a lot from her. I learned a lot about public relations. I learned a lot about, you know, speaking the truth when it comes to sexuality and being very candid and, you know, having a little bit of sense of humor and a tongue of cheek and still trying to be medically accurate and responsible. So she was a great...
I've learned that from her, too. I mean, she really, in terms of sex therapists, doing media work, she She was the first.
Right.
So I really am grateful to her. And when I met her at this conference in 1995, she was really quite short. I was surprised.
No, she was very short. Oh, yeah.
But brilliant.
Oh, yeah,
but I also
yeah.
got to meet and talk to and hear Dr. William Masters, and he was asked what was the best advice he could give to an older man who is worried about losing his potency. And at the time he was asked this, he was 77, he was reporting this, but I think he was into his 80s by the time I heard about this. His answer was filled with such tenderness. He said, talk to your partner.
Yep.
Tell her you have these concerns. She's probably concerned and afraid to tell you. And then talk to a competent sexologist. Or I would add, it wasn't in the quote, but urologist, like you, about how to reactivate your bedroom scene. And he had a humble definition of good communication in a relationship. And I'll never forget this. And I put it into practice. He said, it is the privilege of exchanging vulnerabilities.
I mean,
that's good communication.
That's very, very well said. And of course, look, good communication is the key to success in any relationship. You know, whether it be a sexual relationship with your partner, whether it be a business relationship with your associates, whether it be an employee, boss relationship with people who work for you. It's the ability to communicate. It's the ability for people to know what is on your mind. You know, what are your desires? What are your aspirations? What are your concerns? So for me, communication is at the heart of it all.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't know what you want, and you can't let me know what I want, and you don't let me know what you want, how do we deal with each other?
Exactly.
I mean, it's impossible. No.
So many of my clients, couples, will come in and it's clear that they're angry with each other and they're not communicating, so I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy.
That's, well, almost one and the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, before we were on the air, we chatted for a moment, and you wanted to ask me some questions and insight about pornography and how that...
Yeah, let's shift to that, because we talked about this a couple of years ago, but PIED, it's porn-induced erectile dysfunction. And, yeah, there's a lot about that, and yeah, so why don't we shift to that, PIED. Because it's going on a lot, and you have porn actors, you have lots of celebrities in your practice, and porn actors are another sort of celebrity in their own little... Their own little world, but...
That's Hollywood, we call it Hollywood East.
Hollywood East, okay.
I'm at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles and UCLA.
Yes.
But our offices in our hospital are right, you know, in the heart of the porn industry.
Mm-hmm.
San Fernando Valley is considered the capital, and so they are people. They live in our neighborhoods. They are our patients. They shop in the supermarket. And, you know, they're just... regular people, and they look at themselves as actors.
Right.
So we see a lot of them because they're very, very conscious of any STDs because
right.
clearly that
and they're
would
tested
be an
a lot, aren't they?
And would slow them down. And, of course, the male actors, you know, have to be able or physically able to perform, you know, at the click of one of those signboards, you know, that
yeah.
they do in the movies.
Action.
Take sick action. So in the old years, it was very inefficient on a porno soundstage because they would have to wait around half a day until they heard got the call. We've got wood. So
See,
when they got wood,
my goodness, yes.
then they could start the production. Well, today, you know, the tricks of the porn stars are, first of all, they use an enormous amount of the ED drugs, Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. They also use an injectable substance called prostaglandin E1, which dramatically increases blood flow. So they use lots of tricks now so that they don't have to wait, you know, half a day for the call. We've got wood. We're ready to go. It's interesting. But they're, you know, they're people just like everybody else. And they have their self-doubt and they have their medical problems. And, you know, the good ones look good and in terms of the male physically. And many of them are, you know, I guess to be polite, more endowed than your average man. I mean, just
well,
as
that's
many
why
of,
they get hired, isn't it?
Well, I think so.
If not for their acting
many
ability,
of our
necessarily
better looking than an average person. But they are people with the same doubts and worries and concerns as the rest of us.
Of course. And so, but now with the injections, because some men that are not in the porn business rely on injections if they have pretty chronic ED, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't mean to denigrate injections. I mean, injections.
No, I know. And let's talk both for porn actors and for the other guys outside of the porn industry. Priapism, let's talk about that, or blood in the penis, maybe clots, or...
That comes from that if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
If you overdo it. Look, most porn actors don't need injection therapy. They're using it for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
An artificial erection that will, you know, last a long time. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the problems with PIED. I mean, mm-hmm. younger, a middle-aged person is looking at that stuff and believing in his mind's eye that what he's seeing is real. And,
mm-hmm.
it's the furthest thing from reality as you can. You have an artificially created erection. And people that have, you know, unusual body types that don't fit the norm almost in any way. You've got lighting, you've got orchestrations, you've got angles, you've got replaying a scene and then making it appear that it's a continuous scene. So it's anything but real. And that is part of the problem, because if a man watches that to any extreme, he begins to believe that anything short of what he saw on the screen is not real. And then that becomes his goal. That becomes what he admires. And to put it mildly, it screws things up.
Yes, it does. And then all the guys that can masturbate to porn and not have any trouble with ED or PE or any of those things, because he doesn't have to worry about pleasing the woman on the screen.
Right. And yet, you know, there is a place, I mean, enlightened view,
for
some pornography. I mean, normal couples, whether they be heterosexual or homosexual or bisexual, you know, find some pornography, and I want to use the word tasteful, but maybe that's an inappropriate descriptive adjective, but reasonable porn, they do find that stimulating in small doses. So again, it's very hard to be judgmental, but I mean, if you take porn as a giant industry, it probably is more harmful than helpful, even though it can be useful at times.
Yeah, I think some of the female-generated porn that is directed, produced, and so on, some of these people like Erica Lust and some of my clients have liked her films because they have a bit of a plot, just like the late Candida Royale's films did. A bit of a plot, better lighting, and people that are in relationships. And that's what a woman often wants to see. Well, how come this couple is fucking, to use the vernacular? Well, because they're in a relationship. They like each other. So,
yeah. No, that helps.
Yeah, that helps a lot. So, I think there's a place for porn. It's just, it becomes problematic when a man watches it and masturbates to it a lot and ignores his partner. Huh. And I do get cases like this, and the woman is deeply hurt.
Oh,
and also begins to hate pornography.
Yeah. There's all kinds of weird dudes out there. I mean, you know, we have now in the current news, you got moguls, you know, that are masturbating in front of their employees because they can. It's so outrageous. It's so hard to believe. It's so hard to get your arms around this concept. It's mind-boggling, and I always pride myself, you know, in having seen just about, you know, about everything. It's sort of like that commercial for one of the insurance companies, you know, where he says, "Yep, we know that. We've seen that."
Oh yeah.
But I'm getting to the point, even as a, you know, as a long-term practicing professional, there are things that are coming across my desk. I say, man, I never saw this before, or I never heard of this before.
Well, but Dr. D, that keeps it new for you. And off the air, we talked about how neither of us plans to retire, at least in the near future. And it's important for older people to stay engaged in life and contribute. And you're doing that, I'm doing that, and it's very satisfying, isn't it?
Well, I agree. And I learned this many, many, many years ago from my father. He said, you know, you don't need a lot of money. You don't need a lot of anything. You just need three things. You need something to do. You need something to look forward to. And you need someone to love.
And yes.
If you have that triad, those three things in your life, you're a very fortunate person. And I have many, many, many wealthy, high-end, you know, patients who have enough money to do anything they want, anytime,
right,
anywhere. And I encourage them to never, ever stop working, you know, to plying their trade, unless they have, you know, some secondary avocation or vocation that can really keep their interest and keep them challenged. Because all the old guys that I see who have their marbles are those who are actively engaged.
Of course. And so never retire, or if you do retire, redirect.
Redirect, and
that's so important to feel engaged and feel that you're necessary, and remain curious. You and I both do that. We remain curious.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the newest thing? And let's figure this out.
And keep it exciting. You know, keep that new mouse perfume coming.
That's right. Because remaining sexual as you age and Brian and I talk about this a lot. It's fun, it's free, and it's the fountain of youth.
Well said. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Fun, free, and the fountain of youth. And I have to warn you that we're stopping a little bit sooner these days with Progressive Radio Network, so we may get the music a little bit earlier.
But you know what? If that happens, then why don't we just dance?
You know, next time I'm in Southern California, I'd love to see you again because I haven't seen you since the conference. We've done all these shows, but I'd love to see you and your wife. Maybe we can do that.
Oh, I would love us. You know my email. I know yours. Anytime.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. And I just want to say before I hear the music that this is what I believe to my very heart, and I suspect you do too. Great sex at its finest is an emotional connection with good skills backed by informed knowledge. And that's what my show is about, Love, Lust, and Laughter. It's about giving people more knowledge. And guests like you, Dr. Dudley Danoff, wow, you give such amazing knowledge. I'm so grateful to you.
Well, it's more than my pleasure. And if any of your listening audience wants to know more about this kind of stuff, they can go to my website, The Ultimate Guide to menshealth.com, and the book is The Ultimate Guide to Men's Sexual Health. So enjoy both. Enjoy one, enjoy the other. But I always enjoy speaking with you. It's really a pleasure.
Thank you. We timed that well because here's the music. Thank you. I hope we'll do this again in a few months.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore,
ma i tuoi piedi tap 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 tap, ma i tuoi piedi tap 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 tap, oh, happy feet, ta-da-da, happy feet.